This week on the Radio Today programme, Trevor is in Copenhagen at Radio Days Europe's podcast day, and he's also been to find out what Wireless Group are doing in that sphere as well. James Cridland will look at what's behind NPR's success, and David Lloyd is back from holidays with more memories from his radio archive.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Hello, I'm Stuart Clarkson. Before all that, it's time to catch up with what's been going on in radio this week. And we're joined, as usual, by Radio Today's founder and managing editor, Mr. Roy Martin, the birthday boy.
In radio, it keeps haunting me that. thank you for the birthday wishes and everything else. It's just been a mad week.
It's been a bit crazy. We'll talk about that in a minute, because joining us as well this week is Darren Altman, the voiceover and impressionist extraordinaire. You might remember him off Britain's Got Talent and every commercial break in radio, probably. Darren, welcome to the Radio Today programme.
Hello, it's an absolute pleasure.
And the reason we partly wanted to get you on this week is because anybody who's seen Roy's birthday video, which has started to go a little bit viral, might have heard your voice on there as Doc and Marty in the little animated bit at the beginning. Thank you for doing that for us.
Well, thank you for asking me. Yeah, it's a pleasure. It's two voices that I've never actually done before. So it was just a case of going on YouTube, watching some clips and seeing where they sort of sat and if I could do them, and it worked out well. Yeah, it was good fun. The animation was amazing at the end. It was incredible.
Yeah, well done to Sophie Greenwood, who put all the animation together and did all the filming and editing as well. If anybody's not seen The Power of Roy, look it up on YouTube or have a look on Radio Today. There's a story all about it. We went a bit narcissistic, but I think it was worthwhile, Roy.
Yeah, I'd just like to point out, I didn't write that story about myself. It would have looked a little bit weird. So thank you for posting that.
So you mentioned, Darren, that you'd not done those voices before. Do you get many jobs to do where somebody says, do this voice for me, and you think, oh, blimey, I can't do that one?
Yes. Generally, I can normally get close to voices, and so they're happy if it's on a radio ad or a corporate video or animation or something like that. Yesterday was another fun day in voiceover land. I was Elvis first thing in the morning. And then I was Sean Connery for a radio station in Spain. And then someone emailed me and said, we're having a Harry Potter themed wedding. And I thought this was great, actually. Instead of having the normal table plan, they would have the Leslie Phillips hat, and they would place it on all the heads of the guests. And it was me being Leslie Phillips, telling them what table they were on. And it was like Slytherin and Gryffindor and Hufflepuff. So it was good fun.
And in terms of the radio commercials, you're doing a lot of those in just straight voiceover voices still. There's still a big demand for it, is there?
Yeah, because I do, as you say, lots of characters and accents and impressions. I get asked to do sound-alikes, but you're going down a little bit of a murky path on commercial radio. You can do for example, a Jeremy Clarkson impression, but not, you can't say, you know, I'm Jeremy Clarkson and I endorse this product, because, you know, you can't do that. But I can certainly do sound-alikes. Yeah, a lot of it, the vast majority of it, is just my natural voice, whether it's acting or just being nice and clear or announcer-like or conversational or in a two-way with a lady or guy that I don't even know who I'm doing it with. So it involves a bit of acting, but it's good fun. I mean, every day, as you know, is a blank slate. I never know what I'm doing from one day to the next, from one minute to the next. It's nerve-wracking and exciting at the same time.
Well, I know you've done some radio voices as well that you've been working on, so we're going to hear some of those in a minute when we play our little game. First, though, let's just talk about some stuff that's going on in radio this week. Roy, the big shock for us this week was probably Ipswich FM and Town 102 losing its licence. Wow, we didn't see that coming.
Well, Ofcom took a long time to announce the winner of this, so we thought something might be wrong. Well, not wrong, but different, and it certainly was. So Celador, they have this strategy of not fast-tracking their licences so they don't have to stick with the old format. So they just reapply for a licence and put in whatever they want. And what they do is include the proposal not to be on DAB, which it turns out was a very risky move for them this time, because the competition, Ipswich FM, Muxco, said we will go on DAB, partly because one of their shareholders owns a multiplex in the area. So they did that, they won the license, and it's the first time that a challenger has come in and beat the incumbent.
Wow, in about 20 years as well, so big news there. I think you'd said they were wasting their money going up against Celador, but you're eating your hat today.
I did, and I think I owe an apology to Matt and the team at Muxco for saying that. But who knew? Who knew history was about to change itself?
Something else new this week for us, Digital Radio Hall of Fame has just been announced. We've got some new inductees of people who've made a massive contribution to the advancement of digital radio over the last 20 years.
Yeah, and it looks like a good list as well. It seems right. There's probably a few people missing, but hopefully there'll be more people added over the months and years.
Yeah, Jenny Abramsky, Gray Allen, Ralph Bernard, Michael Hill, Quentin Howard, John Kempner, Rashid Mustafa, Ian O'Neill, and Sir Hossein Yassar from Pure Technology. And see all the list and all the details about them at radiotoday.co.uk. And finally for this week, Jeremy Vine going to be doubling his on-air hours. As well as his Radio 2 show from the autumn, he's going to be on Channel 5 TV every morning for a couple of hours, and then a mad dash across central London on his bike, presumably, to get to Wogan House in time.
That's not going to last, is it?
Well, we'll see. Watch this space. He says it. Yeah. Says he will. He says it works well with his Radio 2 show, but...
I'm sure he'll want to, and he'll have every intention to do so, but give it 6 months, he'll be like, no, I can't do this, I'm knackered.
What I love about Jeremy is that he can go from a light, frothy subject to a more weightier issue with no embarrassment, with seamless segue. And coming up on the programme, we'll be interviewing the 90s soft pop and the Lighthouse family and having a chat with the owner of Britain's fluffiest dog. Albert first, testicular cancer!
Right, okay, let's play our little game then. We haven't done this for a few weeks on the podcast, but essentially it's to find out who's the biggest geek this week. We ask our guests to come up with some geek questions in Stu versus Roy. Darren and your many voices are going to ask us some questions, so let's go for it.
Well, coming up in the programme, we've got later on, we've got Popmaster, and then the traffic and travel with the lovely Louise Pepper. But what Capital Radio DJ used to do a weekly mega mix called the Friday Fry-Up? The Friday Fry-Up.
Friday Fry-Up.
Oh, yes. Before my time.
I'm going to go for Michael Aspel.
Wasn't Michael Aspel at all. So, 1 year out. It was John Sachs.
John Sachs.
As you know, ex-Absolute Radio and Virgin Radio presenter Christian O'Connell has left the UK and is now presenting The Breakfast Show on Gold 104.3 in Melbourne. What was the first song played on Virgin Radio?
Right.
Go for it, Roy. Go on.
Born to be Wild, a specially recorded track by INXS.
According to my sources, are you sure?
It depends which Virgin Radio you mean.
It was a live cover of David Bowie's Changes by Gavin James.
Oh, that's the other Virgin Radio. New Virgin Radio, isn't it?
If you'd have said B.
At least I should get half a point for that.
Could have phoned a friend. I know that I'm coming up later on in the programme with some more radio moments, but I'll just pop back into the studio to give you a quick question. Mick Brown rose to fame, presenting on Capital Radio in London, and left in 2007 to pursue other ventures. But on which radio station is Mick currently presenting the Drive Time show?
Radio Jackie?
It's Radio Jackie, the sound of Southwest London.
Oh, that's a good one, that. Good one, that one.
Sorry, David.
Let's go for question number four. So Roy's got 1.5 points.
This DJ has had a long and illustrious career broadcasting on Leicester Sound, London's Kiss FM, Galaxy, Radio Nova, Atlantic 252, Virgin, Beat 106, XFM, and all the stations in the Midlands, those shocking stations like BRMB, Beacon, Mercia and Wyvern, Jack FM Berkshire, and is now presenting on High FM in Oman. But who is he?
Stu, Robin Banks.
Yes, Castigat, Redendo, Mores. Indeed. Yay. Brexit, stage left. Yes.
He's been around a bit. Wow, that was a long...
I was going to say, is there any stations he's not worked at?
St Helier and Sutton Hospital Radio. Yes.
That's my one foray into radio. I did 2 years at Sutton General Hospital. Loved it. Loved it.
Oh, well, we love the voice as well. Thank you for coming on, Darren. And I think Roy is officially Geek of the Week.
Wow, the first time ever.
Especially for the birthday boy.
Yay.
Thank you, Darren. You can find out more about Darren on his website if you want to book him for some voiceover or impression work, darrenaltman.com. And happy 40th birthday to Mr. Roy.
Thank you very much. I wasn't looking forward to it, but it's, you know what, it's turned out okay.
Well, Trevor Dan now reports from the second annual Radio Days Europe podcast day.
Wonderful, wonderful Copenhagen.
Welcome to the home of Hans Christian Andersen, Bacon and Borgen. There are now more than 500,000 podcasts available online everywhere in the world. And today, more than 300 delegates from 22 countries have come together to see and hear a series of presentations about the issues facing the world of podcasting. How do we make money? Do new names work better than celebrities? How do broadcasters use podcasts to reach younger audiences? Well, it's been fascinating. No panels, lots of audio. So from a British perspective, it's felt much more like Next Radio than the Radio Festival. I'll be reviewing the day with a panel of UK delegates. But first, let's go back inside and talk to some of the star speakers. Steve Pratt, last time I interviewed you at a Radio Days Europe, you were talking about CBC and about music. Now here you are talking about podcasts and Pacific content. What happened?
I think I'm just a huge nerd that gets excited by new challenges and new areas. When I was at CBC, we were very early in podcasting in 2005, and as the scene started to change about 4 years ago with Serial and the Apple Podcast app, we saw a really interesting opportunity to make a podcasting company that has a very bizarre niche of working with brands and doing nothing else.
So branded content, does this mean that you go to famous brands we've heard of and say, would you like a podcast? If so, we can make you one.
That was the initial offering. We're in a very nice position now where, because we're one of the only companies on earth that just does this, most people, if they're interested in it, research it and come to us. So they're kind of already interested in a podcast and they know they're looking for something and they
drop
know that.
Some names of your clients.
We have a bunch of great clients. Dell Technologies, Charles Schwab, Slack was our first client, Red Hat, McAfee. We're working with Facebook right now.
And what have you learned from talking to them that they want? Why do they want to come into podcasting? Because not very long ago, those kind of people were saying, well, why would I want to be involved in something so niche?
It's not niche anymore. Like they, and this is the fascinating thing about it, is that brands have the ability to build very large audiences very quickly, and they have a lot of ways to be able to talk to people and let them know about a fantastic show. So the idea for a brand that you can become your own media company and make somebody's favorite show and they sign up to become, you know, a subscriber of your show and they spend 30 minutes every episode with your brand and you're making them happy over and over again, that's a really valuable proposition for a lot of brands.
What's the one secret of making a successful podcast then?
I would say it's two tips. We have a chart that we use that is just a simple XY graph, and on the bottom is creative bravery and on the vertical axis is commitment. And the creative bravery is, you know, particularly for a brand, make the best show you can possibly imagine. Don't make a piece of branded content. Don't make an infomercial. Don't interview your executives. Don't talk in corporate speak. This has to be as good as every other show that's out there. So suddenly you're HBO and this is your Game of Thrones, or, you know, make an amazing show on the creative bravery scale. And then the commitment side is tell as many people about this as you possibly can in your target audience. So use all your strengths and all your channels and think really strategically about letting lots of people know about it, and not just at launch, every single episode, go through the same kind of list of audience development check marks to say, we're getting the full use out of this and everybody knows about it.
Steve, thank you.
You're welcome. Great to see you again.
Kelly Reardon gave us a very interesting presentation about setting up a specific podcast studio for ABC in Australia. So this is a public service broadcaster, not unlike the BBC, making podcasts that have nothing to do with the broadcast output. Why did ABC want to do that?
Look, I think for the same reasons that the BBC is looking at it. We have that incredible linear audience, but as it grows older, we're not rejuvenating the younger audience on radio. And the younger audience now wants a different type of audio. They want an audio that's much more conversational, much more intimate. And so podcasting is definitely the space where you can grab that younger audience and create that listening habit for people who may never have a radio in their kitchen, may never drive a car because they're used to Uber and driverless cars and everything else. So I think podcast is a way that you can really tap into that audience and give them a type of content that resonates as a 21st century type of audio.
Because the easy thing, and I think this is what the BBC has been doing until recently, is saying, let's move our well-known broadcasters into the podcast space and that will just get podcasts going. But you said, no, we're going to find new voices who will appeal to the new people. How did you go about finding them?
From all sorts of areas. I'm a big believer in finding those people that you'd like to hang out with at a party. So, you know, whether it's authors, whether it's musicians, we use comedians. They can come from all walks of life.
And not necessarily celebrities.
Not necessarily celebrities. We do have some celebrities, but I like to find the kind of celebrity that's on the way up rather than the way down. So we do have a few celebrities, but we increasingly look to develop new, fresh talent. And that's where comedy is really amazing because you can find those, you know, up-and-comers. But also we look for people who are just great conversationalists, and those aren't necessarily radio-trained people. I used to do a lot of work air-checking radio presenters for the ABC, and I spent so much time actually trying to beat out of them all of those kind of cliched radio crutches. And so what I look for now is people who are just natural conversationalists.
Do you know what? We talked about this on my podcast last week about how we've got to unlearn a lot of our production skills, haven't we? A lot of the things that we told people for generations not to do, we've got to say, no, that's fine, actually. Yeah. No, you can talk about your own experience when you're doing an interview.
And it doesn't have to be as polished. I mean, I still think there is a certain standard that is more listenable. But of course, podcasting gives you the scope to be a little bit more free with the format. You know, you can really mix things up and you can play in the space and you don't have to stick to kind of the rules that we all learnt when we were learning radio, you know, 20 years ago.
Kelly, give us one tip for good podcasting practice.
I think focus on the lived experience. So find real people to tell real stories. We've done a really great podcast called The Pineapple Project, which is about being better at money. And we could get all sorts of finance experts, dry people telling you how to save money. But by finding real people who are the case studies, you just, human beings connect with other human beings. And so you've got to find just ordinary people to share human experiences, because when you've got that in your earbud, that's what counts.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you so much.
Joe Coatman talked about Acast and particularly about the whole business of marketing podcasts and monetizing them. And I was really struck by your story about Bose and their professional cans. Tell me that.
Absolutely, yeah. So we've been working with Bose now for the best part of a year. And one thing that struck me was, I was amazed it took just so long for a headphone brand to get into podcasting. I mean, it's a perfect medium for them. You got upmarket, tend to be quite a male, affluent audience, and that's exactly Bose's target audience. So we started working with them many months ago, making bespoke ads for Bose, which were made purposely just for podcast audience. We also had the typical podcast endorsement. So Bose gave all our podcasters all their noise cancelling QC352 headphones. And they allowed the podcasters to...
You mean these?
Yes, those ones. Yeah, absolutely. I've got a pair as well. They're really good.
They are good, aren't they? Do I get money for that now?
Yeah, you do. Yeah. What's up, yeah. And all the podcasters generally loved them. That was a good thing. It wasn't that they were having to say, you know, oh, this is a great product, or read from a script. There's nothing like that at all. They actually generally enjoyed them. And people like Adam Buxton made great reads about them. So Bose loved all those. And then there's a third part, which is something completely new that we haven't done before, called Bose Recommends, which is this feature where every week we chose a podcast that we thought deserved championing. And that podcast would make a two-minute trailer about their show. And in it, they'd thank Bose for helping podcast discovery. And that would seamlessly slip into the post roll across our entire podcast network. And we saw a huge increase every week for that podcast that was featured. And of course, by doing so, listeners were crediting Bose with helping podcast discovery. So it worked really well. And of course, all the results that I showed earlier today just showed what a successful campaign
it was.
Well, just
pick that one that was in the bottom right-hand corner of your slide.
It was essentially, the best return on investment is knowing that your products are sold. And at the start of the campaign, I think it was 6% of our listeners had Bose headphones. By the end, 15%. So 150% increase in ownership of Bose headphones from the start to the end of the campaign. So if that doesn't tell you podcast advertising doesn't work, I don't know what will.
One last question then. What's the podcast that you most want to walk through your door tomorrow morning? What's the most marketable thing that you haven't got?
Oh, I couldn't possibly say. That's the conversation going on elsewhere. I couldn't possibly say. No, I mean, I think we're now working with the BBC. I mean, clearly they are the global leaders of podcasting, the largest of the lot. So that's changed our entire business. But there's our Search for New Podcast Star and Launch Pod.
Well, that's what I meant. And your colleague on stage just now said how important it was to get more podcasts aimed at women.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. From the very start, we've known it's been preoccupied by white middle-class males. So now, thankfully, so many more ethnicities, females, all sorts of people coming into this market now, which is fantastic. And we just hope a competition like this will kind of really attract the attentions of people who feel they've been underserved and want to get their voices out to a wider market.
Good luck with that. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. Cheers.
I've come outside, it's very, very balmy out here, and I found Sandra Sperber, who's from Der Spiegel magazine, but Spiegel Online.
Yes.
You did a really interesting presentation about what steps a magazine takes to become what we used to call a broadcaster, but is now an online, on-demand podcaster. What did the people at the magazine think as you moved into this space?
Well, there was this notion podcast is something up and coming. It's somehow interesting, but they didn't really know how to approach it because we didn't have any kind of radio history. We didn't have radio news. We didn't have any radio documentaries or stuff like that. So it was like a blank page. We could start from the very beginning and figure out what worked for us. And
one thing that you talked about, which is, I think, the opposite of the way magazines and newspapers come together, is they sit around and decide what they want to publish. Mm-hmm. And what you said was, no, we go out and we ask the listeners what they think.
Yeah, we were surprised how dedicated our listeners are and how much feedback they give us. And so we developed this kind of conversation with our listeners, and we're asking them from time to time about their input, about their stories and their opinions. We asked young people about their opinion on the new government. Are you feeling hurt? Is the government doing enough for you? Or during the last election campaign, we asked for people who never voted for Angela Merkel, who are maybe even in an opposite party, and who vote for her for the first time. And we got back two listeners who were members of the Social Democratic Party who said on our program, I'm going to vote for Angela Merkel because her refugee politics were so convincing. And it was really, really interesting because there's no other way to really find those people. It's really hard to find a Social Democrat who will vote for Angela Merkel. And that was really interesting to get those kind of stories from our listeners.
Tell us that little story about when the politician rang up your correspondent who you were interviewing in the studio.
Yes, so there's one basic rule in radio that I learned when I started in working for a youth radio, turn off your cell phone. But this colleague, he just came back from an interview with the leader of the Liberal Party, and he was so in this interview mode and still finishing his story and going back and forth. And he said, I can't turn off the phone. I'm still talking to his office and I need to finish this interview. But we can talk for 10, 15 minutes about my interview and what just happened. And so in the middle of the interview, his phone rang and we figured, that sounds like the politician. That sounds like Christian Lindner, the leader of the Liberal Party, who just canceled the coalition talks with Angela Merkel and surprised the whole country. Everyone was talking about it, and he called into our show, basically, to go over the details of the interview. So that was really, really funny. And
I like this because it's a bit like the New York Daily. I don't know whether you ever hear that.
Yeah, of course.
You're exposing the machinery mm-hmm. of journalism. And that's something that's really liberating, I think. And it's something that a lot of broadcasters would be more nervous about.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the feedback that we get is really, really nice and kind of lovely because a lot of them say that the reporters, they're humans to them.
Well, I think they're more authentic, they're more real.
More authentic. Yeah. And the readers or listeners see those reporters from a different perspective. They get to know them, they get to know the humans, and they're not just a byline next to the article and with some funny picture and a guy that you can send an email within 2 seconds just to throw all your hate at him. So that was really also nice for our writers to experience this kind of, or to hear this kind of feedback of listeners who said, well, that's a different angle, and I got a different perspective. I understand your coverage more.
Sandra, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Here we are backstage with our splendid on-stage host, Martin Liss. You, Martin, you had a long career in radio. Now you're advising all sorts of companies. What was the event like for you?
It was great. It's a very, very full day, to be honest. It's exhausting. It's exhausting. There's a lot. Yeah. There's a lot you need to digest. But that's what I like about it. You know, when you know nothing about podcasting and you're here for one day and dig it all in, you know an awful lot at the end of that day. And that's called a sort of cool.
In some ways, it was quite repetitive. But then, on the other hand, the fact that so many people said the same things made them feel true. I feel that we are beginning to learn some real truths about podcasting.
Well, we're still at the beginning. Repetition means learning, but we're still at the beginning, of course, and there are the same problems and the same challenges all the time, which is true. But still, we are in a very close ecosystem, and most of the people out there don't even know about podcasting, don't know what it is, don't see the opportunities. So, yeah, maybe we need a little less repetition next time, but I think as a standard for European podcasting, it's a very good day.
What I liked about the day was that compared to some conferences you and I have both been at, we got a chance to listen to stuff.
Yeah, that's true. That's
it wasn't just industry talk.
That's true. Yeah, you get a peek outside your box, don't you? I mean, it's not only radio people talking about radio, which is a bit like radio, you know. You get people from other industries, particularly even old school industries like newspapers and people we look down upon, you know, like, oh, newspapers, what do we want to learn from them, you know? Quite a lot, actually, because their approach to podcasting, storytelling, politics, and so on, it's quite interesting. What I like about it is it's really like a speed dating of topics. It's lots of things that you get hammered into your head. I like the format that it's usually 15 minutes, 20 minutes max, and next one, please.
So if you were consulting a traditional radio group, mm-hmm. would you say, yes, you want to get into podcasting, or no, leave it to the podcasters?
I would say you need to be aware that the world is changing, and you need to make sure that whatever your brand value is, whatever the promise of your brand is, needs to be relevant in 5 or 10 years as well. So if you're a music radio station, you really do have a problem, because no matter what the numbers say, there are enough people bringing music to people. If your core value is you're a local station, then you have to think, how do you translate that into a new, fully digitalized world? And surely there are means how you can do local radio in new ways, for example, in podcasting and in other offers, than you can do it on FM. So it's translating your brand values into the digital world is what you need to do. But I would in general say that if you want to stay relevant as a brand and as a content provider, podcasting and storytelling and all these things are absolutely must be on your list.
Thank you, Martin, and well done.
Sure, thanks.
Well, I promised you a panel of experts to discuss the day, and here they are to introduce themselves.
Hello, I'm Laura, and I'm a producer at Radio Sokolnov, which is a company that make several podcasts, including The Football Ramble and Berkhamsted Revisited.
And you were a 30 under 30, weren't you?
I was, yeah, 2 years ago. I was 30 under 30 in Paris.
Hello, I'm Catherine Kerr. I'm the senior podcast producer at Wireless Studios and director of Podcast Pioneers.
Now, Radio Days Europe, the big event, there's hardly ever anyone from Britain at it. And yet this event, Podcast Day, there's a lot of people from Britain who want to know about podcasting. Why do you think that is?
I'd say there's just been a lot more awareness in the industry in the past year, 2 years or so, and it's steadily been growing, and a lot more people are going out on their own and grasping the technology that's available to them and exploring the podcast space and actually starting to understand the difference between traditional radio and linear formats and everything that can be done in the on-demand world.
What did you make of the day then? It was tiring, actually, wasn't it?
It was tiring, but I was just saying to Kat earlier, what I loved, because, you know, going to conferences and going to lectures is quite school-like, and normally you're like, oh, just looking forward to the beer. But this was the first time where, you know, we got here at 9. I was like, I'm actually so excited for all the chats. And, I've got a big stream now on my phone of just little insights, little notes that are really useful, like really useful takeaways, even as much as like with Google's new podcasting strategy, the difference emphasised by the guy at Nielsen between an iOS user and an Android user.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
did
no,
you?
I had, because I'd looked at Pacific Content, who broke that Google story. They had mentioned that, and I hadn't. It was only through this guy, I've forgotten his name now, the guy at Nielsen, anyway, it was only through him emphasising it. I was like, wow, we really...
Tom
Foster?
Webster.
Webster, there you go, anyway. It was only through him saying it again, I was like, okay, we actually need to think about what we can make for this Android user. I think that's going to be an exciting move.
One of the things that interests me is the extent to which, as this drifts away from being something that, frankly, people do on iPhones in their bedrooms and becomes an industry, I wonder if it's going to become less creative and more restrained. What do you think, Kat?
I don't think the format is restrictive enough for it to not be creative. I think there will always be people that try and push the boundaries, and by its very nature, it's a very sort of grassroots thing, isn't it, podcasting? So it encourages people who don't have a voice in other places to find one and make one.
One thing that is quite interesting, it's on a different note, but talking about grassroots and podcasting and things like that, was two people today were speaking about Facebook communities and how they've grown around their podcast. So Death in Ice Valley, which is from the World Service, and Creepy Podden, who is from the guy behind Creepy Pasta. They've got really big Facebook communities surrounding their podcast where people are just wanting to chat about it all the time. And I think that kind of energy is only something you get through grassroots type things.
Kat, you've been involved in a lot of branded content for the podcast space, as we always call it. Why do we call it a space? It's not a space. Is it a sector? I don't know. Anyway, they always call it a space. Branded content. There was a brilliant story by somebody early on this morning, the guy from Panoply, about the GE podcast, where they originally scripted it with mentions of GE, and the sponsor had come along and said, no, take them out. We don't want it to sound like that kind of product placement. What's been your experience of working with brands?
Well, I think The Message is a really good example and quite an early example of brands being quite brave and very forward-thinking in the branded content area, whatever you want to call it. And in my experience, the brands that I've worked with previously have not been the ones you would immediately expect to be the first ones to take risks. They've actually been brands like the National Trust or Parliament or Historic England, who've all put the trust in the producers to actually make something that fits with their kind of strategic goals, but been more hands-off in terms of allowing that content to deliver what people will actually come in for and using that as the vessel for their own messaging. So actually taking a step back from kind of hard sell advertising and allowing content to do what it does best in terms of connecting with people on a very emotional and authentic level.
Well, we're knackered now, but will we come back next year?
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
Copenhagen, wonderful, wonderful. Copenhagen for me.
Thank you, Trevor. He's back in a minute with more chat about podcasts. First, I wanted to just take a moment of your time to tell you about CleanFeed. Have you heard about it? Well, whether it's an outside broadcast, an interview down the line, or you're co-hosting from a remote location, CleanFeed is designed for radio and for podcasters as well. And now it's really simple to connect live audio over the web. The quality is really good and you can record as well from right within your browser. CleanFeed doesn't cost anything at all to get started. It'll only take you 30 seconds to sign up and you'll be doing your first live interview or your first recording down the line within a few minutes. And you can find out more at cleanfeed.net. That's cleanfeed.net. Trevor.
Thank you, Stu, and welcome to the headquarters of Wireless Group, formerly UTV Media, formerly The Wireless Group. See what they're doing there. I'm here to see Matt Hall and Jimmy Buckland to talk about Wireless Studios, their new venture into podcasting and online audio. Matt, I've known you since GLR days. What have you been doing in the online space before you came to do this job?
Well, quite a lot. After I left BBC Online, as it was called, and then GLR, I was at The Guardian helping set up their podcast and develop their podcast offering. I was there for 7 years, and then the last few years was consulting, which, as I famously recall, when we were having this, we were talking about setting up this interview, I once mentioned to you I was doing a bit of consulting, and you said, "Yes, neither am I," and that was all going kind of really well, and I set up with Andrew Harrison a company, and we launched Romaniac,
which has done very well,
Brexit podcast, which did really well, and another culture show called Big Mouth. And Andrew, since I kind of left the company, Andrew's gone on and set up and launched the Anger Management podcast with Nick Clegg, which is going great guns, so that's really good. And I was kind of very happy doing that and really enjoying that. And then somebody tipped me the wink that there was a kind of gig going at at Wireless that might be kind of interesting, and started chatting with Jimmy, and yeah.
So before we talk about the kind of the business side of this, from all that work that you did in online audio, Matt, after you'd had a long career in broadcasting, what did you learn about the difference between podcasting and traditional radio?
There's a number of differences, and it kind of depends on what you want to do with that audio. But essentially, you are serving audiences which are really interested in definite topics. And that, I guess you can say, is narrowcasting. But it's not a narrowcasting in the way that the traditional broadcasters would understand it. It's narrowcasting where you can go as deep as you want and not worry about losing people, because there is always an audience out there.
And they've elected to listen to it, so they're already comfortable with the idea of the product.
Yeah, so we always used to say it was quite interesting with the Guardian's Football Weekly, if ever there was a international week or a week where there wasn't much going on, and the podcast used to come in at a kind of 10 minutes or 15 minutes shorter than the usual time amount that the podcast usually was, you would get complaints from people asking why it was light, you know. And to which the response was, it's free, people. Thanks for that.
But Football Weekly was a really interesting example, I think, of the sort of Test Match Special syndrome, which is it doesn't really matter whether there's anything going on. If there's people you like talking to each other, you feel that you're part of that experience. And that's what often makes a great podcast.
Yeah. Exactly that. And people talking with passion and expertise. You know, whenever you look at any of the research that anybody does around podcasting, it's always that the audience likes being talked to by experts and likes the passion that comes from those experts.
Now, Jimmy, sorry to use the S word, but you are director of it, strategy. You wouldn't be doing this if you didn't think there was some revenue in it. That's been the great challenge, hasn't it, for the podcast community? How do they make some money? How do they support themselves? Why does Wireless Group think that there's some cash in online audio now?
I was sort of looking eagerly to my left there, Trevor, to see if is there someone else in this round table who I can defer that question to. I mean, I think it goes back to the why of why News Corp saw an opportunity to acquire Wireless in the first place, which is that actually audio, but not just audio, spoken word audio or talk radio or whatever we might wish to call it, is on a real resurgence. It's not stagnant, it's not stayed. Actually, it's a very vibrant and dynamic space to be operating, whether it's the opportunities of connected devices, smartphones and so on, whether it's smart speakers. We see this resurgence of interest, and we see audiences engaging as never before in spoken word audio. I mean, News Corp would take a broader lens, and they would look at their audiobooks business with HarperCollins, and they would see the massive growth that they're seeing year on year, and they're reporting each year in their figures of people paying to access spoken word audio content. So they can see that there's a business model for that type of audio content. If we then look at speech radio, certainly in commercial talk radio, there is a proven business model. TalkSport and latterly Talk Radio and TalkSport 2 make up the UK's most commercially successful spoken word free-to-air network, I suppose, if you call it that. So the extension into podcasts is natural. It's the third spoke of that audio market that we didn't have properly covered as a business.
So from your perspective, where's the right place to put these products? Is it on your own app? Is it through Acast? Is it iTunes? Is it Audio Boom? Is it all of those? How do you distribute the stuff that you'll be making?
Well, there isn't one answer. I mean, the idea is that Wireless Studios acts as a centre of excellence for on-demand audio content production and also live audio content production, broadening it out. But Wireless Studios takes existing skills that we had in working with third parties and producing audio content around the world with our Premier League radio business. We distribute Premier League radio to around 70 countries. We've got around 25 customers for that product. And we also have some other partners, including some we can't talk about, that we make audio content for. So we're building on that foundation. And actually, if we work for third-party clients, it might depend on what their strategy is for where they want that content distributed. But if we take our own brands, if we take TalkSport and Talk Radio, we take The Sun and The Times, clearly they all have slightly different business models. You know, for a brand like The Times, it's a subscription business, so we are looking carefully at how we can contribute to the user acquisition journey that The Times would have and The Sunday Times.
The user acquisition journey, Jimmy. You are a director of strategy.
I mean in more...
Horizontal or vertical?
Easy to normal language. Let me be less wonky for a minute. You know, they're trying to prove that people will pay for journalism. That's a really important principle, I think. And along with other publishers around the world, I think they are starting to show that for quality journalistic content, people will still pay. Clearly, they want people to discover their content behind that paywall. And actually, maybe podcasts are a great way to discover new audiences, to acquire those audiences, you know, to bring them into their brands and to move them into a subscription.
Maybe talk more about that relationship, because I know you're moving into their building, aren't you, in the fullness of time. But let's just hold off on that for a minute. Matt, the current portfolio, because you've only just started, mm-hmm. are you mainly still taking online versions of programmes that are on Talk Radio or Talk Sport or Virgin?
That's a large part of it. Mm. But what we're trying to do is to make it so that even if a lot of those programmes are originated online, we're adding extra value to it. So we've just relaunched Hawksby and Jacobs, who were doing a very popular kind of podcast, and we've just kind of relaunched that, made it a weekly rather than a daily show. And H&J are now basically recording some extra stuff which goes in that podcast, whereas previously it was kind of stripped down, listen again opportunity. So some of that we're doing, the stuff that's come on, that's originally started on the radio, but we're also starting and have launched already a couple of shows that are purely kind of podcast, which we've just launched the film, Talk Film podcast.
Which is Jamie East.
With Jamie East is presenting that, and obviously he's the Sun's film reviewer, but he also does a lot of kind of film content on his show, but this is essentially a standalone film podcast. And then the thing that I'm kind of most proud of so far, because it's just brilliant and I've got very, very little to do with it, Martin Kellner does the overnight show weekends on Talk Radio. He started doing a podcast called Ruthie, Me and My Dad, where basically him and his 17-year-old daughter just discuss matters of the day. And they just started doing that on their own, off their own bat. And we heard it and just went, this is brilliant. We've actually not changed very much. All we've done is just brought it in-house, given it a bit of a kind of graphics kind of re-rub, and we relaunched it. And you can already see that it's kind of just doing those things that Martin maybe didn't have time to do, you know, making sure that there's kind of, it's launched at the right time, and just it's got a bit of kind of like promo about it, and just giving it a bit of a push. And you can already see the figures are kind of going up week on week.
Do you want me to tell you about the Kardashians? Keep up with them?
Well, I need to know. I've not heard anything about the Kardashians all week.
This is breaking news. It's not breaking news when you're listening to this. I'm not breaking the news, by the way, just to be clear.
Yes.
I don't want people to think that, like,
you're that close to the Kardashians, yeah, that you're breaking the news.
Now, out there, people are saying, this is interesting. Does this mean that Wireless Studios is going to commission new ideas for podcasts that aren't necessarily related to any of your broadcast brands or to your newspaper brands?
We've got a high barrier to get over, both in terms of commissioning things, but also in terms of the stuff that we're making internally. We've got a lot of boxes that need to be ticked. Certainly, I think going forward and in the fullness of time, we could well be commissioning stuff that doesn't have a connection to any of the brands that kind of Jimmy talked about previously. We're talking to a number of the News UK newspaper brands and kind of sub brands as well about creating podcasts that obviously they don't have a radio iteration of. But yeah, there's no reason at all why in the future we wouldn't look to kind of be commissioning the right idea. But it has to tick a number of boxes. And whether that is in terms of the number of audience, whether that's in terms of the revenue it can bring in, and that's either through sponsorship or kind of paid for stuff. So there's a whole load of different ways we look at it. But certainly in future, we'd be looking to do that.
You've got Catherine Kerr here on your team, multi-nominee at the Podcast Awards for branded content. I was wondering, Jimmy, are more companies now, more corporate organisations, getting the idea that maybe podcasting is a good thing to get into for their brand? Because historically, they always, I know from pitching these ideas myself, you know, 10 years ago even, they'd say, and how many listeners? And you'd say, well, you'd probably start with about 1,500 if you're lucky. And they'd go, get out of here. Are they beginning to understand that if you start small, you can grow and that that's a good place for them to be?
I think the difference with wireless is that we're part of a larger media entity. So what we're not doing is going into advertising agencies saying, hey, we've got this great podcast with 1,500 listeners. I think what we can actually do is say, we have this content strand that we run across print or across digital. We have this show on TalkSport that also now has this affiliated podcast that is very much a podcast and does something different to what the radio show does, but it's connected in some way. So if we take a show like Hugh Wizzy's Mission to Moscow, which is a really fantastic and quite different sounding show from one of our presenters on TalkSport 2, actually, when we go in to talk to brands about Hugh, we're not just talking about his podcast. We're also talking about his presence on YouTube, and we're talking about his radio show as well. So I think it's putting all of those elements together and being able to put something together that actually has scale and you know, reaches audiences in all the different places, you know, where they are these days.
Who is the biggest omission from Gareth Southgate's World Cup squad for you?
Probably, it's probably contentious, Jack Wilshere. Jack Wilshere.
Who should be England captain and why?
I don't actually disagree with Harry Kane being chosen as England captain.
So it's maybe, like, I don't know, Kyle Walker. He's going to play every game. I like a captain, but actually I can see what's in front of them.
What's your earliest World Cup memory?
Yeah, well, I was in France when they won it in 1996.
Okay, so back to the move. You've just spent a lot of money on these new studios here, Virgin down the road here, and the Talk Sports and Talk Radio. But you're moving up to London Bridge. Tell us about what you will have when you get there.
Yeah, it's a very exciting time for the business. It's very exciting for everyone from programming through to sales and everyone in between. Probably it's a very stressful time for a couple of engineers and more technical minded people in the business.
They must be really annoyed that they just built these studios.
There's definitely a few people who are saying, "Can there be a year where we're not building new studios, please?" The launch of the three new national stations for wireless in 2016 was a massive moment, because what it said was that we didn't just want to be TalkSport, we wanted to be something so much broader. And we've seen, you know, really encouraging growth. The latest Ragels have us at 3.8 million weekly listeners across our national radio business, which is a high watermark for us. That's not a level that we've been at before, and it's certainly not the level that we could have been at previously just with TalkSport where it was. So the business has been on a real growth path. I mean, I think we're just getting started, and when we're in that new building, you know, with our colleagues in the newspapers nearby, and we can work together in that more collaborative way, and I have to say, in an environment that I think will be fantastically motivating for our staff, you know, there'll be really lovely studios. I think we'd be really optimistic of, you know, making further strides forward in what we're able to do.
The only downside I can see in any of this, Matt, is that you're back into your terrible commuting world. And those of us who follow you on Twitter have quite enjoyed the fact that you weren't coming to London every day for the last few years, because we didn't have to put up with pictures of Grantham taken from the window of a
rainy East Coast mainline. Well, you won't have to put up with a Virgin train for very much longer, will
that
you?
That is true. No, you've managed to nationalise the railway. but no, on a serious level, it's quite interesting, isn't it, commuting that distance? You know, you're up in Nottinghamshire and you're working down here.
Yeah, I think I find it. Do you know what? I find it, since starting again in February, I found it a really useful. I've always found it a really useful way to decompress from work, but I find it a really useful way to actually kind of spend a lot of time listening to stuff, a lot of time thinking about stuff. And thanks to the lovely new facilities at both London Bridge and at St Pancras, it's actually the whiz down from
when they're working.
Yeah.
There is that. We could go on forever, but that's it for now. Good luck with Wireless Studios.
Thank
good
you
luck
very
with
much.
Your move. And back to you, Stu.
Good stuff. Thank you, Mr. Dan. We've got Mr. Lloyd's Radio Moments coming up, and Mr. Cridland will delve into the world of NPR next. It's all very formal this week, isn't it?
Broadcast Bionics brings you Phone Box, Oasis, Virtual Director, and many more innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Come to bionics.co.uk and find out more.
At james.crid.land and in your favourite podcast app, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, learning radio's future from NPR.
I'm Sabrina Farhi, and this is NPR.
NPR's audience is up. The average weekly broadcast audiences of the top 20 NPR member stations continue to grow, from 8.7 million in 2015 to 11.2 million last year, says an article in Nieman Lab. They're on record highs in terms of total audience. NPR's mobile apps are growing in use too, and paid station membership, part of NPR's funding, is also increasing, as is revenue overall. Broadcast radio listening by 25 to 44-year-olds to NPR programming increased by 26% in 2016. Now, that's a significant growth. But it's also listeners who don't typically listen to talk radio of NPR's type. So what's making younger audiences listen to NPR? Well, obviously, the news is one thing. That's a large part of NPR's output in any given week. And there's certainly evidence that all news media has seen an uplift since the election of President Donald Trump. Whatever you might think of his politics, he's certainly been newsworthy. Another thing, though, is NPR's distribution strategy. Their programming is literally everywhere. From podcasting to smart speakers, NPR is almost omnipresent on a connected device. Podcasts are an obvious part of NPR's strategy. They're easily the world's largest podcaster. Some programs make it directly onto podcast, while there's a digital-first strategy for some programming, not least Up First, NPR's daily podcast, which according to Podtrac is the third most popular podcast in the US. A second is their use of smart speakers. Amplify Media report that between November 2017 and March 2018, NPR member station streaming from Amazon Echo more than quadrupled. And Amazon and Google smart speakers account for over 16% of weekly total listening hours for NPR member station streams. Their NPR One app is another important part, a personalised, skippable news radio stream. It delivers a different form of radio, which is much more suited to an interactive device like a mobile phone. It will undoubtedly gain them different listeners than a linear stream will. Back in the mid-2000s, when I was running Virgin Radio's digital strategy, 20% of our superfans told us that they'd first heard the radio station online and then found us on additional platforms too, like broadcast radio. Digital undoubtedly added to Virgin's audience figures. And NPR's success seems to back that up. Be available on as many platforms as you can and uniquely tailor your product for each of them if you're able. I mean, if fusty old public radio can manage it. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next week, keep listening. Now on the Radio Today podcast, here's David Lloyd.
It's 4 years this week since we lost one of radio's most familiar voices worldwide. His program began in 1970, and it sounded like this.
Here we go with the top 40 hits in the nation this week on American Top 40, the best-selling and most played songs from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from Canada to Mexico. This is Casey Kasem in Hollywood, and in the next 3 hours, we'll count down...
The countdown began on the 4th of July, 1970. Our first show took more than 18 hours to record, and at first, we only had seven stations. But Don and I believed... And so did a growing number of listeners. Back then, there were no long-distance dedications on the show. That didn't come along until 1978.
Listen to this letter from an American serviceman. He begins, "Dear Casey, I'm a technical sergeant in the United States Air Force assigned to a remote location overseas. This is the first time in my 14-year military career that I've been separated from my wife, Susie, for this long.
I'd like to share with you something I've learned over the years. Success doesn't happen in a vacuum. You're only as good as the people you work with and the people you work for. I've been lucky. I've worked for and with the very best."
Casey Kasem, who died this week in 2014. His American Top 40 was aired around the world and much listened to here for decades when we had so little music radio around. It's 20 years this week since a quiet company acquisition which turned into a giant. EMAP, now Bauer of course, bought a London FM station for £25 million. It was then called Melody.
Ah,
two greats together, Louis Armstrong and Oscar Peterson at the piano, Moonsong. May McKenna sang in the circles and from Elvis Presley at the beginning, until it's time for you to go. This is Melody Radio London, the time exactly 11 o'clock. Good evening, I'm Dave Gilby.
It was Lord Hanson's station. Lord Hanson had heard beautiful music stations in America and said, I want to have my own station. So it was, you know, it was independently owned. And you didn't have to say a lot. It was mainly instrumental music. Then gradually, Jeff Mullin, he said to Lord Hanson, look, you know, to get a bigger audience, we need to put a few vocals in. So then some vocals came in. I mean, the presentation to do was very boring. And it just amazed me, the number of people who told me how much they loved it. And I said, and actually, there was a sign, I remember this, there was a sign in the studio. It said, Melody Radio, radio without speakers, or something like that. And I thought, well, that's me.
David Hamilton reflecting on the calm sound of Melody turned by EMAP into magic. It was then at a 10% reach. It's now at 11%, but has been as high as 19. When EMAP bought Melody, 60% of its audience were older than 55, and that figure is now just over 30%. This week in 1975, trial broadcasts from the House of Commons began on BBC and commercial radio.
Ian Gow asked the Secretary of State for Industry, Mr. Wedgwood Benn, about his attitude during the campaign and his post in the government.
What do the industry ministers...
The trial lasted 1 month. Radio was allowed in, TV wasn't. The experiment was judged a success and made permanent. Then on the BBC, coverage was aired on Radio 4, where afternoon plays were disrupted. After the first 2 days of coverage, the BBC received 343 phone calls and letters of complaint, rising to around 3,000 by the end of the following month, and 31 letters of appreciation. Not many radio presenters end up in Parliament, but this week, 35 years ago, Roger Gale won his seat. He'd been a pirate broadcaster.
You're tuned right now to 242, baby. That's Radio Scotland swinging for you. Behind the microphone here, Roger Gale.
Radio Scotland got in touch with me and said, we need jocks for Radio Scotland. This was the pirate Radio Scotland. I listened to what they had to say and said, you don't need a jock, you need a programme director. And they said, oh, do we? What are they? So I told them what the programme director was, insofar as I knew anything about it. And I was hired as the programme director for Radio Scotland. So I went up to Glasgow, got the team of jocks together.
Ex-offshore pirate broadcaster Roger Gale, who won his seat in Parliament at the general election this week in 83. Talking of elections, there was a European one this week in 2004. And on that same day, something new in the West Midlands.
With 40 hours of specialist programmes every week. Raw new music. Indie. Punk. Hip-hop. Metal. Goth. Doom. Unsigned. Kerrang 105.2. Plus, documentaries on the world's biggest bands and events.
Kerrang. Fag break or audio.
So, elections today.
Yeah!
Blimey. Fancy putting that on the same day that we launch.
It's just bad planning.
The launch of Kerrang 105.2 in the West Midlands 14 years ago. Music with attitude. Kerrang, of course, continues, but that major West Midlands frequency later became Planet Rock. It's now Absolute. Staying in 2004 and a cameo appearance in The Archers.
Hey, yes, sir.
Lovely evening. What can I get you?
Shires, is it?
That's it, yes. Local speciality.
Right. Pint, then, thanks.
Oh, it's hard work, this.
Chris Moyles in The Archers on Radio 4 this week, 14 years ago. Loads of celebs in that soap over the years. Bradley Wiggins judged a sport relief challenge in Ambridge in 2014. Humphrey Littleton appeared as himself to open a village fete in 1957. Dame Edna Everidge appeared as herself in 1988. And Princess Margaret became the first member of the royal family to play any part in a BBC drama programme in 1984.
Ma'am, have you a moment? There's somebody I would very much like you to meet.
Good evening, ma'am.
Your Royal Highness...
It seems to be going terribly well, doesn't it?
And then there were these two.
How do you do, Mr. Wogan?
Well, pulling the devil be the tail. I'm delighted to be in Ambridge.
I'm ever so sorry, but I'm just about speechless. I just can't believe that you're really here at last and actually talking to me, Prue Forrest.
Well, now I could say the same thing.
What? Terry Wogan nearly speechless. That's a good one.
Cameos in The Archers. Radio now brings music and entertainment around the clock, around the world, and gives immediate exposure to performers. But that didn't happen to anyone until this week in 1920, when Australian soprano Dame Nellie Melba broadcast from Essex.
The place where she broadcast had a concrete floor. It was just a shed. And somebody thought, well, that's a very important person. And they went to the local man and asked for a carpet for Dame Nellie Melba. And when she saw it, she said, roll that damn thing up. How can I sing on a carpet?
Happy anniversary to the first live entertainment broadcast in the world by a celeb this week, 94 years ago. So, with the big Top 40 show with Rich and Kat 9 years ago,
the UK's biggest chart show,
GB Radio in Newport opening 35 years ago, Twiggy hosting his last show on Capital in Nottingham after 15 years, 5 years ago.
So, I won't be coming back, but listen, thank you everybody for listening to me.
The launch of the UK's first licensed Christian station 23 years ago.
To stand here now in the park looking over several thousand of people and you say, you know, who was part of helping to change all this and to bring us on air? And they're all waving, and you think...
And with the BBC local radio studio software Vylor going on air for the first time with the trial in Northampton 4 years ago, those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments! Thank you, David and James, Trevor and all the guests this week, plus Roy Martin and Darren Altman on at the start of the podcast. Next week, Trevor's off to another day dedicated to podcasts, this time at the BBC.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.